welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. And every now and then we like to tackle some issues that are, well, probably not things you think about every day, but things that really do matter in your life and really in your daily life. And things like freedom and property rights and taxation, tax reform, you know, not breaking news sort of stuff, but stuff that if you understand can certainly help you and help you make better decisions and help you understand really some of the bedrock principles of conservatism. And our go-to guest for these type of topics is always Brian Balfour. He's the executive vice president of the Civitas Institute, and recently he wrote a blog post called "Sorry Cooper, There's No Such Thing as a Fair Share of Taxes." Of course, Governor-elect Roy Cooper throughout his campaign kind of hit that mantra, banged that drum pretty often. And it was a, you know, political thing that you always hear the left talking about fair share, and the wealthy don't pay their fair share, and the rich don't pay their fair share, and on and on and on. And so we're going to bring Brian in to talk about, is there really such a thing as a fair share when it comes to taxes? And I think you'll find this very, very interesting. And we will get off on a little bit of a sports analogy also in the conversation, but I think you'll look forward to it. And at the end of the day, I think this will be helpful to understand that when you hear someone, you know, like Bernie Sanders throughout his campaign talking about, oh, the wealthy this, and, you know, all that's doing is trying to get people jealous of somebody who has had success in their life. And it's not fair that, you know, I make this and look at all that they're making and, you know, they need to be paying more taxes. And really the bottom line is it's not a zero-sum game. You know, I'm going to bring Brian in here and hypothetically, let's say, you know, he makes, I'll make up a figure, $700,000 a year. And let's say I make $25,000 a year. The two are unrelated. Him making more than me doesn't have anything to do with each other. Perhaps he is doing things that I'm not doing that causes his value to be significantly greater. Now, perhaps I would think that I would like to make more in that example, but it really doesn't have anything to do with what he or anyone else might be making. If you flipped the roles, if I were making $700,000 and he were making $25,000, well, you know, he might be prone to saying, wow, look at how much he's making. But the two are totally unrelated. Because somebody else is successful doesn't keep me or you from being successful. And that notion of equality and fair share when it comes to taxes and all this kind of stuff, it's really not founded in any kind of principle, but rather it's rhetoric designed to make people angry. Well, look at how much they're making. They're not paying enough taxes. Well, you know, you don't really know how much they're paying, do you? And even if they were paying a smaller percentage than someone making less, perhaps because they are making more and maybe contributing more through jobs and that sort of thing, they're able to take advantage of the tax code, which everybody can take advantage of. The laws are there. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation. I hope that you'll enjoy it. And thank you for listening, as always, to What Matters in North Carolina. Well, here on What Matters in North Carolina, we always welcome the opportunity to speak with Brian Balfour. He is the Executive Vice President of the Civitas Institute. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, you have written a piece, and as always, it's very thoughtful and well articulated. And it says, "Sorry, Cooper, there is no such thing as a fair share of taxes." Now, before I let you dive in, I want to set this up that during the campaign, Governor-elect Cooper was saying things like, raise your hand if you agree that tax breaks should be going to the middle class. And he's touting a kind of a fair share mentality of taxation. And so your article addresses that. And from a broad overview, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I just, this gave me an opportunity to write a little bit about this concept. You know, what sort of principle we're looking at when people use this throw about this term, you know, fair share of taxes, and what does that really mean? So, you know, I went back and researched, in terms of a just or fair price of a good or service of a product to use as by way of comparison, and that's something in the literature, philosophers and economists and ethicists have been looking at for centuries. You can even go back into ancient Greek texts, and some of the philosophers back then were starting to grapple with the concept of, well, is there some sort of objective, you know, fair or just price of a good or service, you know, absent the agreement of the two people in the exchange? If there's some sort of like third party, you know, something that third parties can all agree to, that there's a fair price. And that's something that was grappled with for literally hundreds of years. You know, you could even fast forward to the 1200s with the Scholastics studying this. St. Thomas Aquinas, amongst his volumes of work, one of the things he looked at, we can find in his text, is this concept, this notion of, well, what is a fair or just price of a good or service? And what was finally concluded upon and has been pretty much settled matter amongst economists and philosophers is that, you know, the only possible objective criterion is a price which the two people involved in the exchange can agree upon.
Okay.
So there's some objective price. For example, you know, this laptop computer, you know, if we were to try to have an exchange of that, there's no like just inherent objective price of that computer. And if you try to charge me anything more, then you're trying to rip me off. Or if I'm trying to bargain a lower price, I'm trying to rip you off. Well, no, the only really truly objective fair price is one we actually agree upon.
Okay.
And that, of course, is going to be based upon our subjective values and you know, supply and demand forces and so forth. So now we translate that into this concept of a fair tax, a fair share of taxes. And because that mutual consent, that voluntary agreement as of an exchange is removed when you start talking about taxes, of course, you know, the government doesn't, you know, give you the option to not pay taxes, or you don't have an option to pay your taxes to a different government. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You have to pay up. So that consent is removed. So therefore there can really not be any concept of a fair share of taxes. You know, it's just strictly arbitrary. It's an illusion. I mean, the term is really just an illusion trying to create this concept of fairness where none can possibly exist because that consensual relationship is not present.
Well, let me go back to the concept of a fair price. And we often hear in sports how, oh, that basketball player shouldn't be making $3 million a year, or that baseball player shouldn't be making, you know, a five-year contract for $100 million. And I try to explain to people that this is what the market is bearing at this point in time. Now, people always want to try to play the emotional card of saying, you know, they don't pay teachers that much, and certainly teachers are more valuable to society than someone that hits a ball. But when you have fans willing to, you know, let go of their money and go to support a sporting event, and they agree that this market price is something that they're willing to tolerate, and they do that by watching, by going to events. And then when you take into account the fact that, for example, in baseball, there's probably only 500 people on the entire globe at any one time that can hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, then it kind of brings some of this back into an understanding about markets. Now, the amount, people always go, oh, well, that's just way too much. But then you go, well, what is the fair price? You know, and currently it's what the market and the owners and the players and the fans have all come together to agree upon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to put it kind of in layman's terms is you are worth what someone is willing to pay you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, kind of similar to a good or service, you know, that good or service is worth what someone is willing to pay for it. And also that comparison between athletes and public school teachers, government school teachers is really apples to oranges because, you know, athletes are in the marketplace. And, you know, the amount of revenue generated by what they do, you know, by these sports teams and these leagues, that's, again, that's in the market. That's from people voluntarily, willingly, you know, paying for the tickets for the ball games and buying the shirts and hats and so forth to generate that revenue versus, again, you know, public school teachers, they're paid by the government, by the taxes collected by the government. And so, you know, therefore, their salaries are set pretty much arbitrarily by the political class, the legislators that are in charge that set that. There's really no market mechanism showing, you know, how much people voluntarily or willingly are, you know, want to pay for their kids' education. Instead, it's all orchestrated and imposed upon us by the politicians.
Well, you just pulled a thread that is get me completely off topic here, but that is interesting. What if teachers were paid on a market type system? That would certainly flush out the ones that don't seem to be as vigorous in doing a good job, and then the other teachers that, you know, every student knows who the good teachers are in a school, they might make more. But it doesn't seem realistic at this point to do that reason.
Yeah, but just imagine, if you will, a wholly free market in education, for example, especially in today's day and age with so much access online. And say, for example, there's a teacher who's teaching, you know, third grade English. And this teacher is a superstar. I mean, she's just a rock star.
Yeah.
The kids love her. She's creative. She's energetic. And of course, word of mouth just spreads, and all the parents are just raving about her. And say this person can offer their classes in a virtual setting online, so there's no limit to the amount of students
right.
she can have. So just imagine maybe even thousands of kids enrolling in this teacher's class every year, and then the parents willingly being able to pay. Or you know, willingly paying instead of it, you know, being taxed and going into the system, mm-hmm. education system, they're paying for this course for their child to learn reading and English and literature and so forth from this rock star teacher.
Right.
And so this rock star teacher all of a sudden can make hundreds of thousands of dollars because there's so many people, she is helping so many people.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just kind of, not to drift off into a tangent, but, you know, we're talking about the comparison between the market and the government funded education and the concern about whether teachers are being paid enough or not. But let's just a thought, you know, process there. You know, there is a model out there that potentially could have those rock star teachers
mm-hmm.
getting paid like rock stars.
Yeah. Wow, what a thought. We'll have to visit that again a little more in depth in the future. Our guest, Brian Balfour, and Executive Vice President of the Civitas Institute. Now, going back to taxation, I think really, in your article, you say really this notion of fair share of taxation is artificial. It's used to describe political power grabs. I call it trying to stoke class envy and fear-mongering and that emotion of jealousy, because people feel like, well, you know, if you're making $1 million a year and I'm making, you know, significantly less than that, you know, somehow that's not fair. And you should be paying a lot more in taxes, which you probably are, but as a percentage, perhaps not, because of the way the system is designed with deductions and that sort of thing. So I agree with you completely. It's really designed to stoke emotional rhetoric.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a more appropriate way, if we are going to have taxation, then it should just be viewed as a means to collect, you know, the revenue for the government to carry out their core functions. It should not be used as a tool for social engineering,
mm-hmm.
Writing into the tax code, punishing types of behavior that the government determines they want to discourage, or encouraging certain types of behavior the government decides they want to encourage. The tax code starts to be using as this blunt object to try to orchestrate people and influence their decisions, where it really should just be, an efficient, non-interventionist means of collecting taxes. By non-interventionist, I mean maybe a better word is least distortionary,
mm-hmm.
In terms of our decision making and in terms of how the economy works, what sort of structure of production that emerges on the economy in order to best satisfy the needs of consumers versus complying with 800 pages of tax code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Exactly. What a concept, a simple tax code. That would be a pretty amazing. A lot of accountants and lawyers would be out of work, so I'm not sure if we'll see that anytime soon. But interestingly enough, WRAL wrote an article about this, which I think kind of teed off your article. And what's funny to me, Brian, and help me to try to understand this, because I am not, quote, part of the wealthy class. But when I read that the individual income tax top rate was 7.75% in 2013 and is now 5.75%, that includes me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now it's just that one set rate. Under the old system, it was a graduated rate where that 7.75% was the top rate, and there were lower rates on lower levels of income. But yeah, now everyone is subject to that same rate. Another thing that they did was expand a standard deduction,
right,
which of course exempts a certain percent or a certain portion of the income that you earn.
So my point is,
yeah.
Okay, it's a flat rate. So maybe you're making $200,000 a year and I'm making $40,000 a year, or 50 or 60. So if you're paying a flat rate and I'm paying a flat rate, it could be argued that you're not paying what you should, because you're making more, you should be paying more. But I don't agree with that argument. I would say that I'm part of the middle class, and going from 7.75% to a flat rate of 5.75% helps me. The standard deduction helps me. You know, I think I've mentioned to you before, I asked the Fiscal Research Division at the General Assembly how many people actually take deductions. And the answer was that 3/4 of the filers use the standard deduction. Mm-hmm. So that's benefiting the middle class, because certainly 3/4 of the state includes the vast majority of the middle class. So how can these people say that these tax reforms are not benefiting the middle class?
Right, absolutely. I think what they try to do is they zero in on the dollar amounts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got someone who's making, you know, $5 million a year. You cut their tax rate from 7.75% down to, say, 5.5%. In terms of dollars, that looks like a big amount versus, you know, a more kind of average median household making $40,000-$50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Apply the same percentages, obviously the dollar amount is going to be smaller in terms of tax savings. But of course, you know, they always leave out, well, how much taxes was that person earning $2 million a year? How much in dollar amounts were they paying in every year?
Yeah.
You know, they always want to leave that, part out. So that's really what they try to zero in on. And I think it gets back to what you're talking about again, is the whole play on envy and jealousy and, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is they're rich, they can afford to pay more. You know, it's totally not fair. Another thing not to overlook too is small businesses. The majority of small business owners, they file taxes on this individual tax schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, you know, the, some groups, I think the Tax Foundation and other tax groups called North Carolina that top, 7.75% rate. They call that the small business tax, because so many small business were,
yeah,
paying that rate. And that, especially when you zero in on that, North Carolina's tax rate was really unfriendly towards small businesses, because,
mm-hmm,
our surrounding states, their taxes on small businesses were significantly lower. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, take, for example, a small business owner that is struggling and finally has a good year. And these folks, you know, the fair share folks, they're going to say, you need to be punished because you're so rich now all of a sudden. But, you know, they're not seeing that sweat equity, you know,
yeah,
that person put in for years and years and years. Maybe they were suffering losses for years in their businesses and finally struggling and finally, you know, are able to succeed and have a nice year. And all of a sudden, you know, they interject like there's some sort of fairness involved for them, for these folks that they need to pay up more.
Yeah.
You know, out of their success.
Yeah, and I think as we close, what is left out of the conversation most of the time is the impact on the economy that typically higher earners are having. You know, most people, unless they've just inherited a lot of money and aren't doing anything, most people that are in the, quote, you know, wealthy class, they are involved in some type of business that typically employs people and either provides a good or a service. And so, you know, that whole positive impact on lives and on the economy is always left out of this conversation. It's always just, well, the wealthy aren't paying their fair share. And again, it all comes down to just trying to make people jealous.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when you're talking about state taxes, you know, people aren't sitting targets. You know, if you start taxing them in North Carolina, they're going to look to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
They're going to take their business, they're going to take their jobs and their income and everything they do for the community and creating jobs for people and creating goods and services. They're going to take it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then where does that leave North Carolina?
Yeah.
You know, are we better off now? We're not getting any taxes from them. We're not getting any taxes from from their employees. All that's dried up.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, when you look at all the options that people have, especially entrepreneurs and today, especially in today's economy, when capital and entrepreneurs and so many things are so, you know, so mobile, can easily be moved. You really got to be wary about what kind of reaction you're going to get from these people when you try to tax them.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to, you know, capital's going to go where it's welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, and where it's less expensive.
Right.
Exactly. Well, Brian Balfour, always interesting conversation. We will have to revisit the whole free market education topic in the near future. You can find Sorry Cooper, There's No Such Thing as a Fair Share of Taxes at ncivitas.org. Brian, thank you once again for being our guest.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Well, I told you that was going to be good. We got off on a little sports salaries there, but I love sports, so I felt right at home talking to Brian about that. But hope you enjoyed that, and that's one you should file away for future re-listening to, because it's always, as I said at the beginning, it's always good to get grounded and have a strong understanding in principles, especially conservative principles, things that really will help you to understand that, you know what, freedom, property rights, taxation, liberty, all these things, understanding them and how important they are helps you to be someone who can look at government and look at free enterprise and look at the market and understand the importance of liberty in our society. So file that one away, listen to it again, and I'm sure you will get something else out of it if you listen to it a second time. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.